Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. Get ready to take your nutrition to a healthier level, equipping yourself with knowledge and some practical tips from our guest, Katie Wellburn. Katie is a nutrition coach at Rocktown CrossFit, nutrition consultant for the medical weight loss program at Rocktown Medical Spa, and a graduate of James Madison University in health psychology. After 15 years of working, raising a family, and her own personal health journey, Katie discovered a passion for nutrition and returned to school to pursue a certification. Now certified as a nutritional therapy practitioner, Katie works with clients in a variety of capacities to improve their health through nutrition and lifestyle changes. Katie has a special interest in nutrition for women in perimenopause, nutrition for sports performance, and nutrition for the family. A wife and mother of two teenagers, she's also an avid exerciser, baker, reader, napper, and traveler to warm and sunny places. Welcome to the show, Katie. It's great to have you on today.
Thanks, Dawn. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited about this interview today because I am such a foodie and I love all the wrong foods for you. And I know that you have some practical tips and a wealth of knowledge to share with us. I'm excited to get into it. This is the last episode in the series that we had on health and fitness and success mindset and nutrition, and we're capping it off with really what comprises most of what makes a healthy lifestyle, and that's what we eat. It's 80% our nutrition and 20% our fitness. At least that's what I thought. Maybe I'm wrong.
Absolutely. A healthy diet is so important. And I appreciate you inviting me on to talk about this topic. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be exciting. I love for the laughers to get to know our guests a little bit more before we get into all the juicy information. So can you share a little bit more about your background and what led you to become so passionate about nutrition?
So I probably came to exercise and the sort of the wellness industry, like many women do. I had just had a baby. I was looking to get my body back, get back in shape, and kind of using fitness and nutrition, manipulating those two things to kind of manipulate the way that I looked, for lack of a better way to describe it. Over the course of time, raising a family, goals changing, and just kind of learning more throughout the years of exercise, different types of fitness, and just making changes in my nutrition, I really started to kind of understand that, you know, there's way more out there for me, for women, for everyone with exercise and, you know, good fitness habits, aside from just manipulating the way that you look, right? It's also about the way that we feel and the way that our bodies are functioning. Of course, also over the course of those years, I was a mother and, you know, kind of seeing how the role that physical activity and nutrition played in my family. And so it was important to me to kind of keep up with changes and doing the best job that I could in that area as a mother. And as my kind of passion and interest grew, that's when I kind of decided to pursue an education in that area and make it, you know, make a career change.
I really love a lot about what you shared in there. And I think you're definitely not alone with moms that want to get their body back after having a baby. So what did you do that was most effective for you to get your body back in your mid-20s? And would you recommend that approach today?
I think I started out by just doing a ton of cardio. I remember I would hit the gym every morning before my partner left for work and get in like an hour on the elliptical. It was just all about the calorie burn. How many calories can I burn? And then, you know, how many calories can I restrict myself to during the day? I'm not sure that I would necessarily recommend this approach. It's definitely what I experienced is probably pretty common. But for me, I think things really changed in my relationship with exercise. And I would say food as well really changed when I started it very intentionally strength training. Mm. When I started lifting weights, wanting to build muscle, fell in love with the barbell. That's really what changed things for me.
And where was that in your journey of raising kids for 15 years? Was it in the midpoint of the 15 years or is that more recent?
So I started lifting weights at home. I was a home exerciser for many years, probably a decade. I was getting up and working out, you know, 5-6 o'clock in the morning before I would get my kids up and get ready for school and get myself ready for work. That's just kind of what worked for me during that season of life. But I did prioritize strength training at that time. Eventually, I kind of outgrew my home gym and I was also ready for a little bit more of a challenge. So I ended up at Rocktown CrossFit here in Harrisonburg. I walked in one day and I actually was there to sign up my son for a CrossFit Kids class. He was getting ready to enter middle school and not the most athletic kid out there. And I just really wanted him to have a place where he could learn some skills without, you know, all of the judgmental eyes of his peers. And so I came to Rocktown CrossFit to sign him up for a class and met Lauren Black that day, your friend and mine, Lauren yes. Black.
And I love her.
I do too. She's definitely a really important part of my story, to be completely honest. But so I signed him up for his CrossFit Kids class that day. And then she looked me right in the eye and she said, "And when are you coming back?" I said, "I'll be here tomorrow." And I've been there ever since.
That's great.
So yeah, CrossFit probably would not have worked for me, you know, in other seasons of my life. But I definitely got to a point where I was ready for something different, knew I needed something different, something more. And being in an environment with a coach is, it can be a really great thing for your fitness.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. So that was, what year was that that you started that?
2015, okay. I want to say.
All right.
Yeah.
And that has something to do with you going back to school, I take it, your whole experience from that, you decided to go back and study nutrition.
Yeah. So I have a degree in psychology. I worked in that field for about a decade when my kids were young. And then I took a period of time where I was not working full time outside of the home. And during that time was really able to devote more time to myself, you know, fitness. Again, that was kind of a season where the gym fit in a little bit more seamlessly than it probably would have when I was, you know, working full time and running around, you know, with kids' activities and things like that in the evenings. And when I began, I mean, it wasn't right away, but I really fell in love, like I said, fell in love with the barbell, got really serious about strength training and building muscle. Was really curious what kinds of things I could do or how I could change my body with building muscle. And that's kind of where I got curious about nutrition. I had been at Rocktown CrossFit for probably about a year. And when Lauren Black asked some questions about nutrition and she shared some information with me, I've always just been a really curious researcher and learner. And I did a bunch of reading and research on my own. Kind of started learning whatever I could. Also worked with her for some nutrition coaching. And again, over the course of time was really able to increase my strength, increase my sports performance, and just manipulate a lot of things through my nutrition. And I was just fascinated. I decided at that point to, I guess I would say that also kind of happened simultaneously to my own health journey. But then as a mom, I have two kids, my son, who I've already mentioned, and then my daughter, who is now 13, but at the time was much younger. She was going through kind of a medical thing. And I was really curious and just really wanting to help and support her. She ended up again, with a medical thing that required a long course of antibiotic treatment. Mm. And as a parent, I was just kind of concerned, okay, I know that I understand that she needs to be on this medication, but I want to do everything that I can to support her, you know, nutritionally at home, et cetera, to make sure that she's as healthy as she possibly can be. I reached out to some nutrition professionals in this area to kind of get some advice or guidance and could not really find anyone who did what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to create what I needed and found kind of a holistic nutrition program. There are, if you want to go back and get an education or a certification in nutrition, there are a million ways to do that. And, you know, some of them are an online, you know, a quick 8-hour online class, you know, or you can go back and get a master's degree that would take you, you know, many, many years. I researched a lot of the different options and kind of decided on what was best for me and my season of life. But I was really looking for, at that point, I had kind of my own personal education with nutrition, kind of from the sports performance side, but I was really looking for kind of a functional nutrition certification program. And that's kind of how I ended up making the decision to pursue this certification. I knew I was really interested on a personal level, but also could see that there was a need for this in this area.
Yeah. And the certification is as a nutritional therapy practitioner, NTP for short. Can you tell us more what an NTP does and how they help people specifically?
Absolutely. So a nutritional therapy practitioner, I don't diagnose or treat illness, but I have a vast knowledge of the various workings of the, you know, the systems in the body and how they all kind of work together, how diet and lifestyle habits influence all of those. And so I would describe it as kind of a functional nutrition education or certification, focusing on, you know, more so the optimal functioning of the body through, again, nutrition and lifestyle habits.
So let's say a laugher says, that sounds good. I need some practical help with my nutrition. I'd love to see an NTP and to find out what they can do for me. You would take them through some sort of assessment and then work with them on a food diary or something and check in and set goals, or what does that all look like exactly?
Yeah, absolutely. So every client is different. I work with a multitude of clients with lots of different goals. I think when people think of a nutrition professional, weight loss is kind of the first thing that comes mm-hmm. to mind. And I definitely have lots of clients who have a weight loss goal, but that's certainly not all that I do. When I begin working with new clients, I do have them fill out some initial paperwork, kind of a medical history, and looking over a lengthy list of symptoms. I'm just trying to kind of get a picture of what's going on, you know, functionally, internally. And also I do typically have people track their food for me, do some kind of tracking of their nutrition. Or, you know, some people do that for the entire time that we're working together. Some people just for a few days. And then, yeah, meet, look over all of those things together. I, of course, want to hear what the client's goals are. And then we kind of figure out a game plan for how to best tackle, those changes and those goals together.
What is a typical length of time you would spend with somebody? Are you hoping that they'll fire you at some point because they've graduated and equipped themselves and gained enough knowledge that they can kind of sail out on their own?
Yeah, absolutely. So for sure, part of what I do is, you know, the educational piece. I also provide that accountability. For a lot of people, it's, you know, for some people that come to work with me, they don't know what to do. They don't know where to start. They don't know what changes to make or what to eat. And so they need my help with that. There are a lot of people who do know. They know, you know, they know a lot of what they should be doing. It's the accountability to be doing, you know, those things day in and day out, even when life is busy, even when, you know, there's snow falling or there's school is closed or, you know, all the different things that pop up in life that kind of derail us. A coach can be helpful to kind of keep you accountable to your goals, even on the hard days, because they're going to come, right? So, part of it is kind of figuring out what it is that we need to be doing. And the other important piece is, you know, making sure that we're following through on that.
Okay. So what is it? A typical time frame might be 6 to 12 weeks or something like that.
I have worked with, I actually have a client that I've been working with for going on 4 years. I've had a few clients that I've worked with for many months or even years at a time. Some people come and want to, you know, they might be able to reach their goal in 1, 2, 3 months. So it definitely varies depending on, you know, what your goals are and all of that.
I think it's a very interesting background that you have that complements itself. So your background in health psychology, I have a guess of what that is, but I imagine it has an impact on what you do now as an NTP. So first question is, what exactly does a health psychologist do?
Yeah. So psychology obviously is a very broad subject. And I took lots of psychology classes over the course of my degree at JMU, but health psychology was always what was most interesting to me. Basically, you know, what leads us to engage in or not engage in health promoting behaviors? What leads us to make a choice to exercise versus not exercise, you know, smoke? Mm-hmm. I did some research, some very interesting research on JMU campus regarding smoking and smoking behavior. Just really any behavior that you can think of that's going to impact your health either immediately or down the road, kind of the psychology of choice and behavior change surrounding health promoting behaviors.
Okay. Where did you work as a health psychologist then?
After I graduated from JMU, I worked in kind of a social work job. Okay. So yeah, okay. I worked with substance abuse.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did the research on the smoking and ended up working in social. What did you find in the smoking study?
I did a multitude, or I assisted on lots of different research projects on JMU campus, but some relating to college student drinking behavior, mm-hmm. or just drinking behavior in general, smoking, tanning behavior. Back in those days, tanning beds were like all the rage, not so much anymore, I don't think. But I, to be honest with you, I don't recall. Okay.
It's been a minute.
The smoking research was not really my favorite, but yeah.
Okay. How do you feel your background in health psychology is playing an impact on your current career as an NTP?
Yeah, well, like I mentioned, you know, part of what I do is kind of the, you know, these are the things that I need you to change, or these are the things that I think that you should change. These are the steps that I think we should take in order to get there. And also a big part of what I do is encouraging, you know, accountability, those types of things. And yeah, absolutely. My health psychology degree is coming in handy in terms of, you know, motivating people for behavior change. This is can be a really complicated thing. And, you know, we know diets have a really high failure rate. And, mm-hmm. and this is why we, you know, we have to, it's not only about what we're doing, but also how we're doing it, the way that we view ourselves, you know, all of those things.
If someone wants to change a behavior and to meet a weight loss goal, for example, what would you recommend their first steps be?
One of the best first steps I can think of is to track your food intake in some manner. What gets measured, gets managed. And so it's very difficult to know kind of what it is that we need to change until we can get really honest with ourselves about what is currently happening. I don't want to necessarily draw similarities between, you know, eating and like your bank account. But if you had a financial goal, you would probably spend a little more time going through your bank accounts with That's a right. fine tooth comb. Mm-hmm. Same thing goes for our nutrition. We just need to take a closer look. A lot of times when we just begin tracking our intake, whether that's pen and paper, or of course there's apps that are right at our fingertips on our phones nowadays, mm-hmm. these can really provide a lot of great insight into what's going on in the diet and what might be driving the symptoms that you're looking to change and how we can, you know, manipulate that to more fit your current goals.
Would you say it's more common that you work with clients who go through that exercise and start recording how much they eat, that they're surprised that they're eating more than they thought? Or do you find that they're not eating enough, so their body is holding on to their caloric intake?
I think most people that I begin working with probably think that they are not eating enough. And then when they begin tracking, what they really find is that they are eating more than they thought they were. Mm. That's probably my biggest experience or most common experience with people.
Okay. And do you help them figure out how much of their caloric intake they should be taking daily? And is there a recommended range for people?
Yeah. So definitely some of the clients that I work with, we do talk about calories and macros. Not every client that I work with has a weight loss goal. And sometimes we're working on things, you know, I have clients right now who have goals relating to hormonal things that they have going on or digestive symptoms, or maybe, you know, some blood work numbers that were not great with their doctor, trying to lower their cholesterol or their A1C. Tracking can still be an incredibly helpful and useful tool, but probably not as important to be looking at specific calories and macros for those individuals.
Okay.
Yeah. So when appropriate, absolutely, we do talk about those things, but it's not every client's goal. So it's not a conversation that I have with every single client.
It really depends on what their individual goals are in terms of how you're going to help them out. Yeah, that's a big thing. It's the macros. A lot of people know what macros are. Somebody could be listening to this episode, and as widely known as it is in the CrossFit community, not everybody knows what that means. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so there are three macros or macronutrients, meaning our bodies need these nutrients in macro or large amounts. And the three macronutrients are protein, carbohydrates, and fats. Technically, alcohol is its own category, sometimes called the fourth macro. But yes, macros are going to be the categories of foods that make up the calories in our diet. So again, protein, carbohydrates, and fats.
Then what is the recommendation that is ideal for the macro distribution?
Yeah, that is a difficult question to answer. It varies so much from person to person. It really does. What's right for me is not going to be the same thing that's right for you. And so it depends on a multitude of factors. A great place to start for someone who has never tracked these things and has no idea where they should be, I think a really common split is going to be like 30% of calories coming from protein, 30% of calories coming from dietary fats, and 40% coming from carbohydrates. Again, just as a really general recommendation, that's a good place to begin. But it's going to really vary so much from person to person, just based on, you know, your current lifestyle goals, you know, health history, all that stuff.
And when we're talking about macros and we're talking about carbohydrates, we're talking about the good carbohydrates, which for me might be a cookie, but but that's not what we really mean. So if you could kind of give some examples of the kind of carbohydrates when they're doing the macro diet would be falling in line with this, that would be great, as well as the fats.
Okay. So carbohydrates and fats are going to be our energy macros. Our energy needs are mostly coming from the calories that we consume in either carbohydrates and fats. We, of course, would ideally want to choose really good quality whole food sources. So carbohydrates are going to be things like vegetables, fruits, whole grains. Also, carbohydrates can be a confusing category because also things like soda and candy and popcorn fit into that category. And so there's definitely a place in the diet for, you know, for all carbohydrates from, you know, across the spectrum. But we do want to center our meals around whole food carbohydrates, again, fruits, vegetables, whole grains.
Okay. And for this is a great time to ask this question. So for people that are just getting started or maybe revamping, if you will, maybe they were in shape in college and now it's been some years and they've had a couple of babies or they've had, you know, their husband out there and he's not had enough time to go or not made enough time to go to the gym for a little bit. And they're like, this is the year that I'm going to pull all this back together. How can our laughers improve their nutrition, get started again, or get started? What are some practical tips and advice that you would offer them?
Okay. Well, the first one, we haven't talked about protein yet. You asked me about carbohydrates and fats, but
that's apparently what I like.
You're not the only one.
I'm not alone, laughers.
You're not alone.
You might be one of me.
Protein is a really important macronutrient. I mentioned that our carbohydrates and our fats are our energy macronutrients. Protein has so many important jobs in the body, and almost none of us are eating enough. And so I am a big fan of adding something to the diet before I ever take something away. And protein is usually the place that I start with most clients, looking at protein intake. Again, if you're tracking your food in some way, that's a whole lot easier to, you know, to figure out where you're landing each day in terms of your protein intake. But without bogging you down with a bunch of numbers and things regarding protein, I would say one of my best tips is to, whether you're eating breakfast or not, that's a whole nother, we could probably do an entire podcast on breakfast. Eating breakfast and, you know, breakfast being the most important meal of the day and all of that. But I would just say the first meal of the day that you eat, whether that's at breakfast time or lunchtime or whatever, the first meal that you eat of the day, make sure you have a big serving of protein. Mm. So I love to see people getting about 30 grams of protein, at breakfast or in that first meal of the day. And that's a whole lot harder to do than you might think. One egg has about 6 grams of protein. And so, you know, a traditional breakfast of say maybe 2 eggs and toast, you're looking at 12 to 15 grams of protein. So figuring out ways to beef that number up and get that up closer to 30 grams. So starting off your day with a nice satiating meal is a great tip. I also would love to encourage people to cook at home more in the new year. If you know, diet and lifestyle changes are a goal for you, a great place to incorporate some of that is to just cook more meals at home. I think we all tend to have a very busy, fast-paced lifestyle, especially coming off of the holiday season. I don't know about you, but I found myself, you know, in the drive-through or picking up takeout more often.
Oh, you might have seen me there.
It happens. It happens to all of us. But if we can, you know, as many meals as we can cooking in our own kitchen at home, we have more control over the quality and quantity of ingredients. Again, that, you know, making sure that we have that good protein source. And it also saves a little bit of money,
mm-hmm.
maybe a lot of money.
Yeah. But, depending.
Yeah.
I want to know, what are some good examples of how to get 30 grams in at breakfast? What are some breakfast menu options?
Yeah. So some go-to things that we do in our house are going to be, I'm a big fan of Greek yogurt. I love Greek yogurt and a Greek yogurt bowl. Eggs are totally fine. Of course, by themselves, they're probably not going to be enough protein. But if you did the breakfast that I mentioned, like two eggs and toast and then some Greek yogurt with berries on the side, that would probably add up to about 30 grams. Some people love to do like a protein coffee. If you're a coffee drinker, there are some options there. Overnight oats is a big popular one. I'm more of a savory breakfast girl, but overnight oats is a great option. You can do like some Greek yogurt and protein powder in there. I think there are egg bite. We do a lot of egg bites in my house, prepping those. But I think it's really going to be just pairing things together to add up to that number, because 30 is pretty. I mean, 30 grams is a pretty hefty number. And so to get there, you have to be intentional.
Mm. Are there some go-to resources online or websites or places where people may be very new to this? First of all, they might want to know how to figure out how to figure out the grams.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, is there anywhere you can point the laughers to?
I would say there are a couple of years ago, kind of the macro diet that you referenced earlier got mm-hmm. really popular. And so there are a good number of resources out there. You could probably just do a quick Google search and find some good visual aids. I, in fact, have some that I use with my clients. If you would like, you can email me. I'll be happy to send it to you. I think that there are a good number of handouts available, or probably social media posts too, that will show you a good example of, you know, some different breakfasts or some different meals with 30 grams, or kind of what foods out there are protein foods and how many grams do they have, you know, in each thing. I think another thing that can be really helpful is just paying more attention to nutrition labels.
Mm.
When you are getting ready to eat something, flip the box over and take notice of how many grams of protein are in this food, and just begin learning which foods that I gravitate towards are high protein, which are low protein. How can I kind of bring one up to create a little bit more balance?
I like that. And with the Greek yogurt, there's the flavored Greek yogurt, which I'm partial to, of course. And then there is the plain Greek yogurt that you're supposed to put stuff in. I guess what you're saying is it's the plain Greek yogurt.
I think there's a time and a place for both. I mean, I think the most important thing is to eat the protein.
Okay.
And so, yeah. So if that's how, you know, if having a flavored yogurt is how you can begin to build that habit, then go ahead and have that. Once we establish the habit, then we can work on improving the habit. But if this is what you like and you enjoy and you know that you can eat that every single day, then, you know, start there. I do love my Greek yogurt, and I buy plain Greek yogurt, and I love to change up the toppings each day and keep it new and interesting. Or if I'm going to work out in the afternoon, you know, I'll probably have different toppings on my yogurt versus if I have a nice leisurely afternoon or evening at home. But yeah.
What are some of your favorite toppings?
I love berries, strawberries. Sometimes I'll do like jelly, strawberry jelly. I do love granola. Honey is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're making it more interesting for sure.
Yeah.
I might be able to get behind that. And I just enlightening me today, because I go to for me is two eggs and toast. And what I'm hearing is that's not enough protein.
Do you feel like it keeps you full for several hours?
Depends on the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. some days it's fine and some days if I'm hungry at 10.
Yeah. I would be curious to see how you would feel if you bumped that up a little bit.
I'm going to try. Let me know. I will. Then I'll be sitting there in a future episode. Call back to Katie. Katie.
I feel so great. I ate 30 grams of protein for breakfast and I'm on top of the world.
Yeah. And for counting calories too, I'm curious, are there apps that you use that you really like and can recommend? Or are you the note person and keep a notebook kind of girl?
So probably the most common app to track your food is MyFitnessPal. Lots of people have it on their phone already and have experience using it. And so most of the clients that I work with already have this app on their phone. And so that's typically what we're using if they choose to go that route. I also really enjoy an app called Chronometer. It gives, I'm a nutrition geek. So it gives all these different numbers. It'll break down protein grams into specific amino acids and just all this data it gives you. I love it. But probably more information than just the general public really needs or cares to know. But MyFitnessPal is probably the most common.
And how do you spell Chronometer?
Chronometer. C-R- Oh man, you're really testing me. Chronometer. I think. Chronometer.
I'll tell you what, laughers, we will look it up and I'll put it in the show notes for you just to double check to make sure that we got that one right.
Yeah.
And in MyFitnessPal, do they tell you how many grams? So if I entered my breakfast, my two eggs and my toast, let's say I didn't listen to Katie that day, but then I eat lunch and I have more protein. As I go throughout the day, will it tally the total number of grams of protein? So I have some idea of where I'm at.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you go through the day and you're logging what you are eating, and as accurately as possible, it will tally your grams for both, the meal or snack that you're currently eating. But then of course, for the overall day, and that can be really helpful to look at. If you maybe only have 12 or 15 grams at breakfast, you can still try to catch up by the end of the day, and it's not going to be the end of the world. But yeah, I in the beginning of my macro counting journey, I did a lot of really interesting things at the end of the day to hit my protein goal. And I learned the hard way. I don't want to be eating like deli turkey and egg whites at the end of the night. Like, I need to just do better tomorrow. I need to plan better. And so I'm not in this position.
So give yourself some grace and compassion. Oh, I'm absolutely hearing as you're building these new habits.
Yeah. Well, I think absolutely. I think, as a coach, I see people, obviously I want you to be successful, but encountering those obstacles and figuring out, oh gosh, it's the end of the day and I'm 25 grams short. Like, what should I do? That's a learning experience. We're going to take those opportunities to learn and grow wherever they come. Give yourself some grace and don't look at it as a failure. Look at it as a lesson.
I love that. And how am I going to figure out, how are we going to figure out how many grams of protein we need a day? How in the world are we going to do this, Katie?
Oh, well, you probably need a nutrition coach.
Right.
Again, it's a very specific, an individual answer. But I typically tell women a great benchmark to aim for is 100 grams a day.
Okay.
And the clients that I'm working with, that's typically the first goal that we kind of aim for, is building up the protein in the diet to get to that 100 grams mark. And some people stay there and that's sufficient. And some people, we work our way up from there. But 100 grams for women, maybe 125 grams a day for men is a really great place to be.
That's a great place to start, at least.
Yes.
And I imagine that's all individual too, because if this person is competing in CrossFit and depending on their in sports performance, that changes everything. And
absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And I should say regarding MyFitnessPal, It's a great app to use to track your food. It's not great at giving you accurate numbers of calories and macros to shoot for. When you sign up for an account, it's going to ask you a bunch of questions about your, you know, date of birth, height, current weight, et cetera, goals. But it typically gives people a very, very low calorie range to begin with. And I don't always love that. So it's a great app to use to track, but maybe not a great app to figure out what is a great place for me to start in terms of calories or macro ranges.
Again, how helpful to have a nutrition coach.
Yeah. Yes.
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 That she sits there across from me. It's awesome. These are such great tips. Thank you. Now, I'm wondering, how do the treats fit in this picture? This absurdly flavorful gourmet popcorn from our sponsor, Pre-Popterus, Shenandoah Valley's only award-winning popcorn. Katie, I don't know if you know this, but their kernels are grown right here in the valley and their factory is 100% nut-free.
Oh, my.
I know. Plus, it makes a perfect gift for any occasion, birthdays, anniversaries, literally anything you can think of. Naffers, that means you can bring it to a party, potluck, game night, or pair it with your favorite show at home as you're cooking your meals more at home. And you can get a discount. Laughers, you can use promo code LAUGH15 and get a 15% discount when you visit prepopsterous.com. That's PrePopsterous.com. And you can choose from a variety of their flavors today. Again, Katie, laughers want to know, how do we fit these delicious treats into our lifestyle to elevate our nutrition?
Wow. This is delicious.
It's amazing.
So I am a firm, excuse me, let me swallow here. I'm a firm believer that there's no such thing as a good food or a bad food. Mm. You know, popcorn is delicious. It's not very high in protein, but it is absolutely delicious. And we all have a kind of a budget, I will say, for fun foods each and every day. We don't have to, you know, protein, lean protein, fruits, vegetables, whole grains. That's not all we need to be eating. We need to be including those things. But we can certainly include some fun things like popcorn. just maybe not something that you want to build your meal around.
How would you best recommend we sparse out our treats? Or is it one of those things where we can have treat ourselves daily or treat ourselves weekly? Is there any kind of advice you could give us on how to indulge but not overindulge per se?
Well, I think I want to say it depends. I feel like that's the answer for the standard answer for everything in nutrition. It's going to depend again on our goals and, you know, what is it that we're working on through nutrition coaching. If you're having, you know, if you're working with me for a weight loss goal, there's probably going to be a little bit of a smaller budget for fun foods during a period of time. If you are someone who is working on, you know, something else, we're working on something else functionally through our nutrition coaching, then, you know, these types of fun foods may not be as much of a factor, but certainly everyone can and should enjoy what they're eating. Mm-hmm. And if popcorn is something that you love, and this is certainly delicious popcorn.
Yes.
Then, you know, I want to help my clients, you know, find a way to include those foods that they love, just maybe more on more of a moderate basis.
You know, I find that when I really love treats is at night after dinner. Is there like a time of evening or a time we should stop eating and maybe not have treats too late? Well, can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I would be really curious to see what would happen to your late night cravings if you upped that protein in your breakfast. Wow. But yes, in general, we do want to give our digestive system a break. Of course, when we are sleeping, we're not eating. And so we're giving our digestive system a break. Some people achieve this through, like you've heard of, intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. But Yeah, I think it's important to have, you know, maybe a 10 to 12 hour window between dinner and breakfast where we are giving our digestive system a break. So sure, in, you know, I think if you have dinner and then you, you know, you need or want something a little bit sweet, go ahead and have it. But do try to, you know, I don't think that there's anything magical about, you know, not eating past 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. or 8 p.m. But sometimes those late night cravings, we're not usually craving, you know, the lean protein, fruits, no. vegetables, whole grains.
Why is that?
Why is that? Because we ate a low protein breakfast. Could be. I shouldn't say for sure, but yeah. But do give your digestive system a break for, you know, for several hours overnight. And again, this is going to depend on, you know, on someone's goal. If we're working, you know, if I'm working with a client who, you know, wants to lower their A1C or something like that, I might have a very different answer. They might need a little bit of a different eating and fasting regimen, but it's all very individual. But for the general public, have dinner. If, you know, if you're still hungry after dinner, maybe you should have eaten more dinner. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But if you want, you know, something, a little something, have it and then stop eating and give your digestive system a break overnight.
Couple of things in there. Why is it so important for our digestive system to have a break physiologically? That's my first question. So let's start there. Let's talk about that a little bit more.
All of those, it just kind of allows things to have kind of a break to rest and reset with, you know, rest and digest. You hear, you hear that talked about, but sure. You know, I mean, just like any other system in your body, it's kind of working all day long while you're awake mm-hmm. and eating and grazing. And so we eat our final meal of the day. Hopefully that food can move through our system. And then we've just got, you know, just giving that particular system in our body a break overnight and allows our, you know, insulin levels to come down, blood sugar to be, you know, blood sugar that's stored glycogen in the body to be utilized. It's our body is designed to have that fast overnight. And then we break the fast in the morning with our breakfast.
Hmm. Yeah. Insulin, that's really important, especially for diabetics, type 1 and type 2, for sure. There's the A1C that you mentioned before. Someone that's listening that may not be familiar with that and why it's so important, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So we hear a lot about insulin and insulin resistance in the media. The standard American diet that many of us are eating it tends to be very high in processed foods, sugar, and many of us, you know, our bodies are not designed to handle all of this. And over time, these mechanisms within our body, insulin is a hormone that our body releases to help us store excess glycogen. If we are eating excess carbohydrates or taking in excess carbohydrates, you know, over the course of a lengthy period of time, our body can become resistant to that hormone and not utilize it as well. And this can really lead to a multitude of health problems, including, you know, prediabetes, diabetes. But I mean, for women in perimenopause or, you know, those that kind of transitional period of life, our insulin levels are already going to be kind of shifting around. And so just making sure that we're doing everything that we can diet and lifestyle wise to not add to the problem, I think is really important.
And the A1C is related to the insulin.
A1C is kind of a measure of, your blood sugar over a period of time.
If someone has gotten to a place where they are insulin resistant, can they reverse that?
Yes. There's lots that we can do. There are, of course, medications out there that can help with this, but we also know that diet and lifestyle changes, you know, going again back to the macronutrients, making sure that we're eating an appropriate level of calories and macros. Exercise plays a really important role. Stress. We haven't talked about stress yet, but that's a big one. So absolutely, there are multiple things that we can do. And I have worked with several clients who have successfully lowered their A1C. out of a diabetic or pre-diabetic range. And yeah, those are the, you know, I love to see people, you know, achieving their goals. And of course, weight loss is visibly, you know, noticeable, but those are the types of victories and success stories that I just love. Of course, you can't look at somebody and say, oh my gosh, you've lowered your A1C. You've lowered your cholesterol.
I can see it.
I can see it. You look so great. I bet you feel so great. But yeah, I love working with clients like that. Because these are things that are going to impact their health for years to come. And it can be really difficult to make those changes and get those things under control. But it's so important.
Yeah, I'd like to talk more about these success stories. It makes me think, well, how long does it take for someone to make a significant change in improving their insulin resistance? So you have some success stories. Again, individuals vary, and so the results are going to vary.
Yeah.
But what would be a typical timeline to take an initial assessment, or they come to you with their blood panel, and then you work with them? When do signs of reversing start to show? Is that a few months? Does it take longer than that?
I would say a great time frame to work on something like that would be something like 6 months.
Okay.
It can take a little bit of time when I start working with a client to, again, kind of gather a health history, look at the current diet, what needs to be changed, added, taken away, et cetera. And also to build in those habits that we would be working on in addition to the diet piece. But yeah, I think you can really see a significant improvement in probably 6 months. It's not a problem that came on overnight, and mm-hmm. it's not a problem that's going to be solved overnight. But certainly I hope that clients will have realistic expectations in terms of a time frame. But yeah, I would say about 6 months is a great place to kind of start.
I'm glad you shared that. We live in such an instant gratification world, society, norm. We expect things to change instantly.
Right.
And it's important to hear that it didn't happen overnight, so it's not going to be undone overnight.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can you share a couple, you don't have to share their names per se, but can you share a couple of success stories that you're super excited about with some people that you have worked with?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, gosh, I mean, over the course of time, I've worked with so many clients, but I worked with a wonderful client who was able to sort out some hormonal things and get pregnant when she had been unable to get pregnant. So that's all. That kind of stuff is very, very exciting.
That is exciting.
I worked with a client last year who was concerned and in the pre-diabetic range with his A1C, and we were able to successfully bring that down a couple of points. I'm working with currently a young adult who is in a phase of her life where she's about to move off to college and has some things going on digestively and functionally that she would like to sort out. And she's seen significant improvement in her symptoms over the course of the last couple of months working together. And I would also say I have a client right now who has a weight loss goal and has been incredibly successful with that. I started working with her. She's been a friend of mine for years, but we started working together on nutrition coaching in the fall, and she is down probably about 25 pounds since then. She's a textbook. Just a poster child for my nutrition coaching. I mean, everything I asked her to do, she managed to do, and she's getting the results that she's working hard for. So
that's great, Katie.
Yeah, I love it. I love what I do. I love having a positive impact on people and families. And I love to see people, you know, achieving their goals, all kinds of goals.
Yeah. So I'm hearing you work with both men and women.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
In all ages too.
All ages.
That's amazing. And you treat, I imagine, or have a different approach with them.
Yeah. So I mean, I am a mom myself. I have two teenagers. And so I have worked with some young adults. Kids can be, you know, a little bit of a tricky or a slippery slope. But again, kind of going back to what I said earlier, like part of my motivation to get into the nutrition space was my own, you know, needing some help with my own child and couldn't really find a resource out there that could provide what we were looking for or what we needed. And so it was important to me to kind of be a resource for other moms or other parents that were in a similar position to me. Yeah, things are definitely different. You know, the metabolism of teenagers is very different than the metabolism that you and I have.
I would say so. Yes. I remember.
I could just meet all of my goals that I have if I could just have the metabolism that I had when I was 17.
Yes.
But yeah, so definitely you have to go about things a little bit differently. And I don't talk about calories and macro. I mean, we talk about macros certainly, but talking about calories and things like that with you know, younger kids, I really try to stay away from that. When I'm working with younger people, it's typically for some kind of functional, you know, goal, like a digestive issue or something like that.
Okay. And you mentioned too, I want to touch on this a little bit. You mentioned stress can play an impact on our health and nutrition.
Oh, absolutely.
What have you seen that works? How should we think about it to have a more positive outcome for our health? What are your thoughts and experiences about stress and nutrition?
Yeah. So of course I have a background in psychology and a degree in psychology. All of our systems within our body are all so connected and interrelated. I think really in the last couple of years, probably since the pandemic, there seems to be a lot more information and education out there in, you know, social media in particular, regarding mental health and kind mm-hmm. of the connection, the mind-body connection, the impact of our nervous system and a dysregulated nervous system on the various different, you know, functions and organ systems within our body. And so, yeah, absolutely. If you are in a stressed out state, either chronically or just situationally, that can absolutely impact your health and your nutrition needs. Kind of going back to the conversation regarding insulin and A1C, I mean, a chronically stressed out person could be having, you know, blood sugar events completely unrelated to what they're eating. It's just, you know, a lifestyle of stress can kind of have some of the same impacts.
What is your advice for someone who is, and we do have so many people right now stressed out?
Yeah.
What is your advice if someone recognizes that they're listening right now and they're like, you know what? I'm one of those people. My stress level is high. What is some advice you would give them to help manage their stress or lower it?
Figure out something that you can do each and every day that is just for you, that is soothing to your body and to your nervous system. For some people, it's some kind of somatic practice like tapping or meditation. I think over the past like year or two, the whole ice bath thing has become real popular.
Really?
Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
No. So let's talk about that and then get into what you were going to say. What are we talking about here? Are we literally sitting in an ice bath?
Yeah. So
that seems stressful.
Yeah. Well, cold can be kind of regulating to our nervous system. Okay. I choose to go about it a little bit differently. I hate to be cold and I'm not going to be climbing into a bathtub full of cold water in the winter time, but taking a walk outdoors when it's cold can be kind of regulating to our nervous system. But just finding something that in particular, you know, speaks to you might be like turning on your favorite song and dancing in the kitchen, just getting some of that, you know, energy out. But I think something that brings together the mind and the body to kind of ground everything is a great place to start in terms of stress. But, and again, something that you can do every single day.
Mm. So people are out there taking ice baths to self-regulate?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Not me, but some people.
To lower their stress. It's a thing.
Yeah. Okay. Or, yeah.
Well, you know, somebody listening might love those things.
Yeah.
My son played in the NFL and spent a lot of time in athletics. So he's taken quite a few ice baths. I don't know if he necessarily likes them, but somebody who has some experience and background in that, it may be more comfortable for them.
Yeah.
Something they're more used to than me. I'm not going to do it either.
You're not going to catch me in a bathtub full of ice water. Sorry.
Yeah. So basically though, to help yourself, what we're getting at the bottom line is to help regulate your system and take your stress levels down is to soothe your system with things and apparatuses that are soothing to you.
Yes. Yes. And of course, I mean, this is not nutrition related, but you know, I'm a big fan of counseling, you know, get a therapist, have a therapist. We all need a therapist.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I'm not going to argue with that at all. It can be very beneficial. And if you're seeing someone or you start to see someone and it's not a fit, you're not going to hurt any therapist's feelings at all. They understand sometimes it's just not a fit.
Yeah.
It is way okay to go, you know, this isn't working out, and find another therapist.
Yeah. Same is true for coaches. I mean, I'm the right coach for some people, but not everyone. So yeah, it's fine. You know, shop around and meet people until you find the right fit.
I agree with that. There's a lot of ice baths are making me think of this. Now I'm traumatized. No, I'm just kidding. With so many trends out there, the ice bath, there's dietary trends and fads too. How can individuals navigate through what's good, what's not, and find an approach that suits their unique needs?
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
That's a loaded question.
So, yeah, the nutrition space is just full of noise, right? And we have no idea what to pay attention to. The keto diet, the Mediterranean diet, the low-fat diet, intermittent fasting, ice baths. This is the best kind of exercise. That's the best kind of exercise. And it's like, what do I believe? It's difficult because, you know, we have the diet industry, which is like a $1 billion industry. And then we have nutrition, the science of nutrition. And the two are not the same. I would say, you know, a good way to kind of weed out the noise is ask yourself, okay, I'm reading this message that says, you know, this is the best way for me to be doing things. This is the best way for me to eat or whatever. Who is profiting off of this message?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Is this person trying to sell me something, or is this person trying to educate me? Because yeah, nutrition, the science of nutrition is always going to aim to educate, you know, us to do better, know more and do better. The diet culture industry, the diet industry just wants to profit off of our insecurities, sell you a solution to this perpetual problem. And so, yeah. That's a quick way to figure out if what you're looking at is baloney or
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there.
Yes.
It's an incredibly huge industry.
It is.
And you just sit there sometimes and go, just tell me what works and I'll do it.
Right. Yeah. And then you ask a nutrition coach and she says, well, it depends.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it's also wisdom in there because not every person is the same and their experiences are different. Their physical status is different.
Absolutely.
You know, their physiology is different. There are different stages of life, different ages. There's a lot. There's a multiple number of factors that would go into what is the best nutrition plan for me.
Right.
Yeah. That's why they have coaches out there to help figure that out. Yes.
And I think too, it's important to note and to realize, you know, the best approach for you today is not going to probably be the best approach for you 10 years from now. the, again, going back to kind of these basic concepts of the science of nutrition, our, you know, the point is for us to be learning and changing and evolving over the course of our life, right? And I want, when I work with clients, I want to educate them on how, you know, how to make nutrition work for you, both now and in the season of life 10 years from now. I also, you know, I love working with moms and parents, people who are responsible for, you know, cooking maybe for not only themselves, but also a house full of people. And how do I change these same concepts for myself, my husband, my kids, you know, now, 10 years from now? It's going to be kind of a moving target. And so working with a practitioner to kind of educate yourself on what works for you and how to manipulate those factors, you know, both now and in the future to continue to be successful.
I like that part too. It's not the same every year of our life or every decade.
And it's not supposed to be. It's not supposed to be. We're not, you know, I think we, and especially as women, like, get stuck in this idea that we, you know, this is what I weighed when I graduated high school, got married, you know, all these different dates, we know this information and this is what size I was or whatever. And we think that we're supposed to look like this forever. And that's just simply not true. So understanding that this is kind of a, you know, an ever evolving thing.
It's the mindset.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So if you, this is an arbitrary number of people. I'm not saying this is what I weighed. This is merely an example. But, and bear in mind, you know, petite women, meaning short, you know, weighing 120, 125 pounds in college and then being in your 40s and weighing 145 is not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You're supposed to change and evolve over time. And yeah. And I, you know, I think too, a lot of women get to a certain age, maybe 40s, 50s, whatever it is. And yeah, we want to look like we did when we were younger, or we are sad that we don't, or whatever. You know, I have a 13-year-old daughter. She's going through puberty right now. She would probably want to run and hide if she thought I was on a podcast somewhere talking about her being in puberty. But anyway, nobody would ever look at my 13-year-old daughter and say her body should not change over these next 5 or 10 years.
Right.
Yet we say that to women kind of in perimenopause. Some people call it second puberty. Your body is going to change. That's what is supposed to happen. And yes, you can manipulate the way that you look through changes in diet and exercise, but also a big piece of this is understanding that it's okay to not weigh the same thing that you did when you graduated high school. It's okay to not weigh the same thing that you did when you, the day you got married, you know, pregnancy, life, et cetera, all those things that you look back over your life and, you know, were wonderful memories or things that, you know, changed you, made you who you are, that all brought you to where you are today. And,
yeah, I would work with several fitness people, even with fitness background. I just enjoy accountability.
Yeah.
It's just, it works out better for me that way. They'll often say, don't pay so much attention to the scale. Would you agree with that?
I would. I mean, there are a multitude of factors that, you know, that play into that number. And yeah, it can fluctuate so widely. I'm also a woman who really enjoys strength training. And I always tell my clients, especially those, you know, those of us who have muscle on our frame, that scale is always going to tell us a higher number than we think we want to see. But that weight, that muscle mass is going to be so protective of us as we age, and losing that in an effort to see a smaller number on that scale, it, you know, might make you feel better on some level. But functionally and in terms of health, is probably not going to improve your health. I mean, certainly there are some people who have weight to lose and it's impacting their health. There's definitely a category of people that's applicable for. But lots of us, you know, who would just like to lose 5 or 10 pounds, is it really worth it? It depends. You know, it does. It depends.
We're going to call it it depends episode.
Yeah. It's a running joke in the nutrition community. That's pretty much the answer to every question.
What would you say are some common challenges people face when they're trying to adopt a healthier nutrition lifestyle and how they can overcome them? You kind of mentioned kind of mindset, how they look at it. What are some additional challenges people face?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of, I think a lot of times, I mean, we're eating the food that we are eating because it's what's enjoyable to our taste buds. Not everybody can get really excited about grilled chicken and, you know, broccoli and rice. Not that that's what you have to eat every, right. You know, every day for the rest of your life, but understanding that not every single meal that you eat is going to be the most delicious thing you've ever eaten in your life. You know, sometimes we just need a good quality protein source, you know, a fruit or a vegetable, a whole grain, whatever it might be that we've got around or fits our goals. And we really would rather go through the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A and grab something that's much more appetizing. Coming to a place where you kind of have that accountability with yourself, like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, I can eat things that meet my goals, help me meet my goals, but maybe, you know, my taste buds are gonna take a little bit of time to catch up. Not that I want people to enjoy their food, but understanding that, you know, over enjoyment of food is, you know, potentially what kind of brought us to this place. And so viewing food from more of a, you know, fueling perspective versus, you know, what you might want, you know, emotionally or just what your taste buds are driving you towards. Understanding that, not every meal is going to be the most delicious thing that you've ever eaten. And I think too, you know, I mentioned earlier, we're all going to encounter obstacles. All of my clients are going to encounter obstacles while they are in coaching. And I don't want to say I encourage that. I certainly don't want obstacles in my clients' lives, but viewing those opportunities as, you know, a way to learn and move forward rather than, you know, get down on yourself. Like, okay, I had a goal to eat 100 grams of protein on, you know, Saturday, and I wasn't able to do it because of X, Y, and Z. Okay. Rather than beat yourself up about not reaching your goal that day, let's look at how we could have done this differently. So we kind of know what maybe habits to build in going forward to keep that from happening. Do we need to plan better? Do we need to, you know, what was the hang up? Where was the downfall, and how can we address that?
That seems to be the key to healthier lifestyle when it comes to nutrition is the habits.
Yes. I certainly believe that. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it's easier to, you know, to kind of break it down into something that I can do each and every day, you know, to move the needle forward just a little bit each day.
Speaking of that, I got one more question before we wrap up and find out how people can get in touch with you. In terms of that, what are some sustainable nutrition practices that people can incorporate in their daily lives for their long-term well-being?
Yeah, so I'm going to take it back to protein first and foremost.
30 grams in the morning, I heard you.
Yeah, trying to have that 30 grams at your first meal of the day. And, you know, anybody who's listening and has never tracked their protein intake, I would encourage you to give that a try. And again, a good preliminary goal for women is about 100 grams a day. Men, maybe more like 120 to 125. Making sure that you have a good quality protein source at each meal. Taking it back again to the fruits and vegetables. You know, there are lots of varying opinions in the nutrition space, but most of us can agree we should all be eating more fruits and vegetables. Cooking at home as well. And I would also say, you know, we talked a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. Water, carrying my water bottle with me everywhere I go to make sure that I'm hitting my water goal each day, and building in some kind of fitness or movement each day that is enjoyable to you. Not everybody wants to do CrossFit, and I certainly understand that, but whether it's walking or swimming or pickleball or, you know, finding some kind of way to get your heart rate up a couple times a week is another great habit to build in.
Yes, that's really great. Thank you for that. And as we wrap up here, how best can the laughers get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can email me at rocktownnutrition@gmail.com. And you can also connect with me for nutrition coaching or consulting services through the businesses that I work for. So rocktowncrossfit.com and rocktownmedicalspa.com.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Katie. This has been super delightful talking with you today about all things elevating our health through nutrition and lifestyle changes. I really appreciate all the practical tips that you gave us. There were so many to help us elevate our nutrition. And I want to thank you again for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I had a great time.
Yes, I did too. And laughers, to learn more about what Katie has to offer, be sure to give her an email at rocktownnutrition@gmail.com, or you can look up her services that are available at rocktowncrossfit.com or rocktownmedicalspa.com. And also don't forget that discount on Prepopsterous using promo code LAUGH15 at prepopsterous.com. That way you can munch on it when you join me on next week's episode. We'll be sure to put all that information for you in the show notes as well. So if you are driving, working out, do not worry about it. They'll be right there for you to click right through. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.